beautiful sound of the whale. Welcome to Music for Human. I am Dr. Jalis Sakran. And I welcome you. I am seated here across from Aurora, speech therapist. Welcome, Aurora.
Thank you. I feel so welcome to be on the show today. And I just want you to know that I am who I am.
I am who I am. I believe Popeye said this earlier.
Popeye.
Popeye and God, I believe, also. Well, God said, I am who I am. Popeye said, I am what I am. Or more precisely, I am what I am. And what I... What, how does it go? I am what I am. And I am what I am.
I have not heard of this this Popeye disciple. Who is he?
Well, Popeye was actually a guru of mine back in the early 20th century. I learned about the various macrobiotic properties of spinach and other greens, and about a sort of spiritual calm that one can bring upon oneself through the defense of the weak and the pummeling of the evil.
We of course must welcome you, Professor Levine. Welcome.
Thank you for welcoming me, and I am very pleased to be here again. And I must say that I've had a sort of mild, pleasurable buzz for the entirety of the last week due to last week's show, or rather the show from 2 weeks ago, since I missed last week's show. And that buzz has stayed with me. And I think this is a great improvement over my previous experience when I would crash after the spiritual high of each episode. Now I maintain a mildly pleasurable buzz, a spiritual buzz. And I'm still experiencing that buzz. It's going strong.
Well, that's wonderful, Professor Levine. I believe you're taking all of the instruction and all of the meditation and spiritual lectures and understanding from the great circle that we make here, and rather than feeling its absence throughout the week, you feel its presence in your mind.
That's right. It has a sort of latent presence. I can actually, if I pay attention, I can actually hear a sort of mental recording of each episode playing in my head throughout the week. I have to attend to it, but if I listen to that little voice, I hear Dr. Jalis and Aurora speaking in my mind and creating this great sensation in my body throughout the week, this gentle rolling buzz. And I have read recently in the psychoactive logical literature that the default mental state of a human being is to have a mild, pleasurable buzz at life itself. And it's only when little events kind of disrupt that buzz that we start to focus on negativity. But eventually, the equilibrium returns and we end up again with this mild buzz, and it can be simply enjoying the feel of walking. I find walking to be a very pleasant and buzz-inducing experience. It could be seeing other people's faces all around us, observing them. And it could be experiencing the rays of the sun on a beautiful day like today.
Well, I believe everyone has their buzz triggers. The first time that I felt this wonderful mental, spiritual buzz was when I found the spiritual path of Sunny Tai Ray.
Sunny Gi?
I believe Sunny Gi is a different path. It branches off into the Shambhala.
The Sanigi.
That's right. When I approach the Sunny Tyrae path.
The Shambhala.
The Shambhala. I approached such a wonderful sense of wisdom, such a sense of being in the sun, and of being embraced by its warm beams.
Now, I venture to ask, was this a serene wisdom?
It was an exuberant wisdom.
Because there's sometimes a tension between spiritual exuberance and serenity.
That's right, that's exactly right. Serenity is more peaceful, more calm. This wisdom was that of a young child who was playing in a field of grass and trees and climbing all over them and experiencing the world in the now, in the present. And that is a true, it's a wonderful type of wisdom that many of us have learned to ignore.
I was reading War and Peace the other night, which is, of course, a famous novel by, I believe it was written by Herman Melville. And anyway, in this novel, the narrator states that he saw this beautiful young lady for the very first time, and it evoked a dual sense of both extreme happiness and extreme sadness at the same time. And the happiness was based on this feeling of the possibility of union, of love, between the spiritual cores of both him and her. But the deep sadness was at the same feeling, he sensed this sublime possibility, but at the same time, the narrator experienced the limiting constraint imposed upon him by the flesh. By the fact that he is an embodied being. His soul, his most sublime aspects are embodied in a body which limits the potential. And I think often the feeling of sublime exuberance can teach us about our limitations at the same time, our bodily limitations. We feel this sense of the sublime, the beauty, the rapture. And at the same time, we realize that we can't quite obtain it. And that can be a very sad thing.
That's such a beautiful way of describing it, Professor. And yet, if we can remain in the present, in that exact time of feeling that exuberance, that rapture, as you said, then perhaps it can be unmet with sadness in the present.
Well, the other argument is that serenity, that calmness, that spiritual calm, opposes itself both to exuberance, but also to sadness. And that through a Zen-like state of calmness, one won't experience either the high nor the low, but instead a kind of constant equilibrium of mild happiness. And I've often wondered within myself whether I should structure my life to achieve the maximum high, the maximum feeling of the sublime, but along with it, the attendant risk of deep failure.
Also, the activation of sublime nerves can, if it is not approached gradually, can result in what you have previously described, a counteracting force, a sudden sensation of loss, and a deep spiritual crash.
And I suppose this is what is experienced by users of certain illegal substances, let's say heroin addicts. They obtain some deep, sublime pleasure from the drug, but they find that that deep pleasure is not sustainable.
Well, I would also argue that the sensation is in some senses worse, but in some senses also better, because it is not a spiritual one. It is a physical one, similar to the effect that one might feel when consuming a great quantity of apples or other fruit juices and feeling immediately very splendid, and to have the sensation that one is able to run or to fly, and then to suddenly realize that this sensation is a falsehood.
Hmm. Of course, some fruit juices can actually induce the ability to jump very high, which can be viewed as a kind of approximation to flying.
But I would be hesitant.
Gatorade, I believe, has that.
It enables you to jump. But I would be hesitant to open a school for jumping higher and claim that I could teach you to fly.
Now, one other sensation that I believe the 18th century scholars used to consider the closest approximation to the sublime is the sensation of terror, of deep, sudden fright and terror. And they believe that this state of sudden terror, for example, if one were, say, walking through the streets of Cambridge and one came across a wild lion, which has been known to happen occasionally when they escape from the Cambridge Zoo. But if this were to happen, one might experience a sudden surge of terror and adrenaline, which would focus the mind like nothing else.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. There have been recent studies that inducing adrenaline rushes has such a great effect on your mind that it can enable you to recall memories better. And they found that the subjects, when placing their hands in water filled with ice, or when being encountered with a ferocious beast, were able to better solve arithmetic problems that were presented to their minds during that interval.
Well, I've also heard that there can be permanent effects from such surges. I would like to play now something that was sent to us by Wailana in our new segment called Rest and Relax.
Welcome to Rest and Relax. First, we'll relax the mind with Gauranga breathing. You can do this lying down or sit in a comfortable position with your spine straight. You can sit cross-legged on the floor, on the edge of a cushion or folded blanket, or even on a chair. Join your index fingers and your thumbs. Turn your palms up, placing the back of your wrists on your knees. This is called Chin Mudra, and it will help you to stay relaxed. Become aware of your breath. Exhale completely, squeezing your abdomen gently at the end of the exhalation. Push all the stale air out of the lungs. Bring fresh air in, filling your lungs from the bottom to the top. As you begin the inhalation, your abdomen expands first, then your ribs, then your upper chest. When you exhale, empty first the upper lungs, then the middle, and finally the lower lungs. Make your breath smooth, moving in and out like a wave. Take a few deep and conscious breaths. Feel your body being rejuvenated as you breathe in slowly and deeply. Then feel your body relax with the exhalation.
That was so beautiful.
So soothing. And I feel that this soothingness really reminds me of the change that I've undergone recently. You know, I mentioned before that I used to experience this kind of high, unsustainable high from the show, which would lead to crashes. And I think in general, I had this problem where I would enjoy things so much that when I couldn't have them, I would crash. But lately I went through this really sudden transformation a couple weeks ago where I've learned to just take everything in moderation and be tranquil and serene. It was a sudden, amazing shift. And I have this feeling that throughout the universe, it's not just me, but change is in the air. It goes along with the changing seasons, from the cold to the warm weather. And I've experienced that many of my friends have changed recently. One of them recently became a criminal, very suddenly. So I just wonder if other people out there are experiencing these sudden changes, either for good or for bad.
And to comment on the generality of that changing atmosphere.
I mean, I know that a couple weeks ago we asked our callers and our listeners to talk about what they are, because we thought that you can sort of choose how you present yourself. But I guess the question we want to ask now is, what have you become? How have you changed over the past recent history? And if anyone wants to call in and tell us about how they've changed, what they've become, the number is 617-253-8810.
Even I have been experiencing change. Man of my age, I thought that change was a thing that I had left behind, except for the periodical changes in my joints and other things, where I was suddenly able to behave as a very fine barometer, that suddenly my wrist would give me a very strange sensation when the humidity was high.
Right, and of course, as a male of the human species, as I am, we unfortunately don't get to experience the constant cycle and change of the menstrual period.
And also just the various phases in the female life. But just the same, I remember watching with amusement and surprise as my hair gradually turned from black to gold and then to gray and then to silver, and sort of gradually becoming less and less valuable.
Well, and all these changes that do occur in women, as apparent as they are in women, they also happen to men. Men go through so many transitions, so many cycles. And if you observe a man for a period of time, you'll see that his mood cycles as well with the moon and with the tides.
Especially if he's a werewolf.
And the changes in the air, I recognized this over the weekend. I went to the beach and I stood in the sand in that area where the waves lap up upon the shore. And I felt the wind in my face and the rain across my hair. And I felt the resonances of change, the lapping waves, the breezing wind turning north and east and south.
Well, would you be happy as a wave?
I would be.
I mean, it would be a very simple life, a very repetitive life, but you know that you lap up at the shore, you retreat during low tide, and you attack during high tide, and you repeat and repeat and repeat. And I wonder if our life as human beings is not just a slightly more complex form of being a wave.
Well, we all are waves. That's exactly what I was going to say. That's what we are. We ebb and we wane, and we grow with the tide. We are pulled upon by our surroundings. But all is periodic. If you look, all the changes, all the transitions we go through, they're all some form of one another.
This music is very transfixing, I'd say. It's so transfixing that it makes it very difficult to talk. It's almost hypnotic. It makes one want to rest. And I suppose it makes our callers want to rest and relax. And if they want to achieve even deeper relaxation and communion, they are quite welcome to call and commune with us tonight.
Yes, please, everyone, join our circle. I believe we have our first caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm transfixed as usual. Every Friday night, 7 o'clock, I get transfixed.
That is really lovely to hear. And I wonder, what is there some sort of...
Oh, I can't hear you.
Oh, I believe that...
Okay. Well, I was wondering if there's some sort of ritualistic setting, some sort of candles that you would light at 7... Some particular room that you sit in, a bathtub perhaps?
No, I sit in the same chair and I listen to you.
The Music for Human Beings chair.
Yes, that's right. It's a red chair. And I get transfixed every week. Last week it was kind of interesting. You were talking about toxic stuff. I decided to throw out the root beer that was in my refrigerator. It's probably toxic.
I'm not sure about your particular root beer, but indeed, very many toxins in ordinary things. It's alarming how many popular ideas seem to be, you know, in sort of a polar rejection with my ideas about toxins. In particular, there seems to be a movement against certain fats, but I've always believed that olive oil, for example, is actually helpful.
Well, of course.
I like olive oil too. I use it all the time.
Right. I mean, what's really the use of moisturizers if one can simply rub a natural solution such as olive oil over one's body?
Precisely.
I use a mix of
actually,
olive oil
I eat
and
it.
Well, one can eat it and at the same time rub it. I find that these two activities go very well together. One can lie in the bathtub, drain the water. So first one washes and scrubs the body clean, removing all those impurities. And then one drains the water. And then one reaches for that big bottle of the olive oil sitting next to the bathtub and pours it and rubs it over the body and drinks some as well, since it is very healthy.
Well, of course, you must be careful about your pores.
Well, I think that's a great idea, but I tried that, and I did it just before bedtime, and I kept slipping out of bed all night. It was painful.
Yes, and it's also good for being able to slip into and out of a lover's arms very easily. One can slip in, and then if one gets tired of those that embrace, one can slip out of the embrace.
I think the...
Without waking up the other person, I thought.
The slipping out may be involuntary without too much olive oil.
Well, you mentioned so many really interesting things on the program. I liked that you brought up Popeye. I thought that was good.
I do find Popeye to be spiritually unusual and interesting. He seems to really only care about protecting the weak, olive oil and their love child.
There is olive oil again. Let's bring a fifth voice in to share this with us. Fifth voice, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you. On the subject of baths, you guys didn't mention Epsom salt.
Epsom salt?
Great for soaking. I don't know about olive oil or too much, but Epsom salt baths, I take frequent baths, are great for bruises.
And I believe it's also good
just for relaxations.
And it also gives
also,
you a nice dose of magnesium.
Epsom salt.
And I believe it's good for constipation as well. I believe the Epsom salt is good for constipation.
Yes, constipation as well. It's small amounts. You don't want to go too heavy with it.
Right.
I've never used Epsom salt. I'm familiar with it, but does it give the bath an alternative texture, or what is the effect on the bath water?
It's not the texture. At first it's grainy, but it dissolves. But the overall feeling I get when I take an Epsom salt bath is it's quite enjoyable. It soaks into the pores of your skin, and it really takes the beating out of you.
And it can also be extra relaxing because the bath water will allow you to float upwards with the addition of Epsom salt. So you feel as if you're floating in your mother's womb.
Now, caller number one, what, you mind if I inquire what your name is? Since
Kel.
You're such a frequent... Kel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Kel, have you experienced that same sort of spiritual crash that I was discussing, that after listening to the show, the sort of relative lowness of everyday life seems so ordinary?
I don't seem to go up and down that much. I remember I used to, but I sort of stay more level now, and I just really look forward to your program every week. I never forget you, and if I'm not here, I'm very disappointed that I can't hear you. So it's very, very enjoyable. And I used to enjoy the guy that was also on.
Ivan the Mellow, maybe.
I liked him, too. Yeah.
I believe he's traveling a bit now. But I should just say that we never forget you as well. Every week, we expect you to call. And when you don't, we assume that you are still enjoying us.
Oh, I am, but sometimes I think, I've called before and you're tired of me and you want new callers.
Oh, of course, we enjoy every voice.
Yeah.
And we enjoy hearing yours and your own resonance and your frequency.
And I think it's really nice to have a sort of knowledge of the people who call. If they call repeatedly, we sort of learn about you, you learn about us, and instead of having a one-off, short-term, say, one night stand type of radio relationship.
Right.
We build up a long term relationship.
Right. Well, when you were talking before about what changes who you are, that sort of thing, I don't remember how you put it, but I learned a new meditation thing. It's called Hum. And it's, you say hum on the intake of your breath and sa on the outgoing breath. And it means I am that, which is kind of more Zen-like because you sort of recognize that you are not.
Well, it's interesting because...
I don't know how to say that.
Professor Levine and I are looking at each other, and both of us recognize the word "khamsa" as of course, being the number five.
This actually comes from Indian roots, though. The Hamsa is the divine swan technique, and the mantra that you hear in your mind as you breathe in and out is "I am that I am. I am who I am."
To Popeye again.
That's it. Popeye again. That's probably why I thought of it.
And what I love about Popeye is that he really knows who he is. There's no doubt in his mind. He never questions his identity. He's natural.
Well, it seems simple, really. It sort of always makes me think it's strange when people say they're looking for themselves when there they are right there. You don't really need to look far.
It's one of these self-evident truths, I think, that when you finally realize who you are, and it may be a search, because there is so much play-acting in life, that it's not always easy to know who you are. Let's bring in a sixth voice. Caller, marhaban. Caller?
Yes?
Welcome.
Thank you.
And caller, we've been talking now about cartoon characters, and I actually really believe that this sort of pantheon of cartoon characters represents a set of primal characteristics, or sort of mythological characteristics, sort of the modern-day version of the gods and the goddesses. So is there any particular cartoon character that you feel is deserving of attention?
Well, until tonight, I have to admit that I've been a disciple of Bluto, and who is kind of the antithesis of Popeye.
But
he is large and stupid, and these are values that are underappreciated.
Is this Brutus or Bruto?
Bluto.
Bluto is the anti-hero of the Popeye series.
Yes, and much maligned. And I have always prized his stupidity, but because he is so completely in the now. But tonight, thanks to your enlightenment, I think that I understand more of the Popeye ethic. But that is not why I called. I'm a surfer, and I like to ride the waves. I've done so for 40 years. But tonight, I was wondering whether I've been doing violence to the waves as I carve them.
Why would you think so, caller?
Well, you know, earlier you were saying about how we are all like waves, and the waves are crashing onto the beach and then receding and so forth, and they are entities with their own perhaps self-aware simple existence, and we surfers use words like "I carved that wave," "I destroyed that wave," "I demolished that wave," and I realize that perhaps there is an objectification of the wave.
Well, and that's a very Bluto-esque idea, carving and smashing and tearing. Bluto would say that.
Well, caller, I'd like to jump in here and just say the analogy we made earlier with the wave, that all of us are waves. Imagine if we were waves that were untouched by any external force. How boring and unfulfilling the world would be.
Yes.
And that every wave experiences external forces and external pressures and motivations.
So it's okay if I continue surfing?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you are painting the wonderful life of the wave. You are shaping it into a more beautiful and individual entity.
I think the act of surfing itself is a beautiful act on myself. I'm a bit of an amateur surfer, which I learned in the tropics. And I think, really, the essence of a wave is to be surfed upon. But what might be important is to understand this relationship and to sort of change the attitude of the surfers to a more cooperative relationship with the waves.
Well, that was the way we did it in the 60s, but now us old farts, you know, we've given way to the young guys who are more into shredding.
Well, the other thing about shredding, I think, is that one realizes that as a wave, and as a wave interacting with another wave, that you are carving and being carved, and the clever sculptor becomes himself a statue. And in this way, that which does not damage you or that which enriches you will also enrich the sea.
So you're saying that it might being a wave, interacting with the waves, is not unlike what goes on in the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, where they smash atomic particles into each other.
And out comes more beautiful particles.
Thank you. This has been very helpful to me.
Well, thank you also, caller. Let's bring in another voice to share this experience. Caller 7, marhaban.
Hello?
Welcome, caller.
Hi, this is Professor Hush.
Welcome, Hush.
I'm enjoying everything, but I'm sensing a little bit of guru mentality from this feminine voice I keep hearing.
Well, what precisely do you mean by guru mentality?
How can I say this? It's not about the unity, it's more about the self.
Well, caller, thank you for your input and for, you know, exposing that. And I've always been a proponent of the idea that the self and the unity, they are one and the same. That by nurturing and enriching the self, you nurture and enrich the whole. And at the same time, you must reach out to the whole and understand it and touch it.
I do appreciate the fact that our caller was able to criticize us. And I think one of the things we do here at Music for Human Beings is that we welcome self-reflection.
Absolutely. I love to be questioned, and I love that sort of interaction.
That's right. I remember the other day I was talking to the good Dr. Jalas, and I said, "Dr. Jalas, you are fat and ugly." And you laughed and smiled, and you laughed and smiled. You derived infinite pleasure from my insult.
So, caller, might I ask what your personal philosophies or your personal changes in mind might be?
Well, I noticed that I wasn't insulting. And I noticed your voice changed after I spoke to you about it, and it was somehow more believable.
Well, caller, do you have any change that you've undergone in the past several days or weeks or months?
Yes, I do.
Well, I would like to jump in, though, and say that really Aurora's voice is unbelievable. And I sometimes hear it in my dreams, and imagine it cannot be real. But caller, I'm sorry to have interrupted.
Well, thank you for your insight, and I'll try to take it a little bit more seriously.
Well, caller, you were to tell us a change.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I'm sorry, caller. You were telling us about a recent change.
A recent change. I have begun to simplify.
So instead of reading, writing, doing, thinking, one can simply sleep, eat, breathe, and drink.
No.
Not that simple.
No. Just simplifying my surroundings. And
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've begun to think that this... Well, no, I thought the very first time I listened to this program that it wasn't so much reality or exactness, but more playful and more sharing the ride.
Well, that's very perceptive, caller. We love to meld in all sorts of ideas from all sorts of people and allow their views to be expressed and to touch them in that way over the radio.
And I do think playfulness is really an important aspect of human existence, and I think I've said this before, that one philosophy which I like to espouse on occasion is that humor is the essence of mankind. Humor is what separates us from the beasts. It's what makes us uniquely rational.
But I'd like to go back to this point of simplicity. So, Caller, what are the more complex things that you've cut out of your surroundings?
I just got rid of a lot of things that I don't need.
Now, what about old mementos from the past? Because I find that as one gets older, as one, you know, in my case, approaches their 70th decade, one starts to accumulate so many things which no longer serve a purpose, but yet are reminders of previous decades. But eventually it becomes a bit cluttered, and in a certain metaphorical way, the past starts to clutter away the present. And I wonder if this was related to your recent clearing away of the clutter, this clearing out of...
That's interesting that you say that, actually, because I was just cleaning everything out, and I was looking at those mementos, and I was wondering, do I need the physical memory anymore, or can I just... maybe not throw them away, but, I mean, keep them in my memory.
You mean when you have a physical object, sometimes it is necessary to ground something. But at some point, I also have found that in my life I have gone through phases of aggregation or hoarding, and then a discarding, where I allow that, as you have said, it has become a part of me, and I can release it to the world to become a part of others.
Well, that's a great idea. I mean, not everything from our past has to form a discrete memory. Everything that we've experienced influences the kind of person that we are. So in a certain sense, the past will always be with us, whether we consciously remember particular events or not. Those events shaped who we are.
And I think also trying to be shaped entirely by the experiences that we have passed is a difficult thing, and there is a lot of value to being able to really enjoy where you are.
So that tension of enjoying and experiencing the present versus dwelling in the past or dwelling in the future.
And there is a lot of tension in remaining in the past, because part of me, when I am so engaged there, tries to capture everything that I am experiencing as I experience it. I try to record and to collect mementos and souvenirs, and it becomes burdensome.
Yes, I found, and I pursued this caller because at certain points in my life, I have foregone all of my personal possessions and have just gone out in the wilderness with loaf of bread, a sack of potatoes.
Yeah, a sack of potatoes.
Yes, and a few items of clothing, just one or two pairs. And I found that all of those memories, those physical representations of all those memories, can be so burdensome, and they can weigh on your mind. All of those objects you're constantly thinking, what if my house burns down? What if someone steals this photograph of my mother, the only one that's left? And if you can just let go of all of those things and allow your mind to be.
Now, one sort of unrelated issue is the fact that today is the Jewish holiday of Passover. It is the fourth or so day of this holiday this year. And of course, I was being professor of Jewish New Age wisdom and mysticism. I, of course, was celebrating this holiday by consuming copious amounts of matzah, but also by reflecting on the nature of the holiday, which is the path from bondage to freedom. And this can be viewed as a national path or as an individual path. I think we all go through stages where we go from bondage to freedom, perhaps to bondage once again, if that's what we're into. But I wonder if anyone else here has ever experienced this feeling that some experience in their life has freed them in some essential way and made them more aware of the world and thus more expanded.
And probably in my own case, when I was younger, I would have said that leaving the house of my father was a freeing experience. But I released myself from one bond and simply went to another bond.
I wonder if any of our callers have experienced this releasing of the bonds.
But when I have come back to my father's house and found that I could be there peacefully, that was when I really was freed and felt very peaceful about it. It did not then weigh on my mind as much.
Letting go is probably a very good thing.
Yeah. But now you see, you make a point, a very good point, with the choice of the voice. It's not that I have been let go, but I have let go, and hence, in some ways, I had bound myself.
You had power and control over the process of letting go. It wasn't, I mean, this is to some degree a contrast with the biblical story of the Exodus, where God is some external force who comes and saves you.
Mm.
And I think in New Age thought, we try to emphasize the sort of self, emanating from the self, these power, the power of freedom.
Mm.
And I think it really is within ourselves. I mean, one little example is the ability to control what we think about and what we focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And we can choose to focus on the past and on negative thoughts, and that's a sort of prison that we're putting ourselves into.
I think that really it cuts both ways. I think that part of New Age wisdom is that we must realize that without trying, we are inevitably bonded, but that without also the cooperation of a universal wish, that we will not be released, however hard we try.
But we do have the power to tap into that universal power, that universal soul and wish.
I think so.
That lies within all of us. And I think the mere act of focusing our attention on the positive, on our future, on even mild pleasures, small little pleasures, you know, some pleasure in food, some pleasure in sleep.
And olive oil,
some pleasure in cartoons and Popeye and Bugs Bunny. I mean, I didn't get around to mentioning this, but Bugs Bunny has always been a personal hero of mine.
Oh, mine too.
Yes, I mean, that sort of, that mischief and happy-go-lucky attitude, that playfulness has really been meaningful to me. And I think by focusing on these kinds of things, we really free ourselves and we can really expand our future horizons in deep and meaningful ways.
Is the other caller still here?
Mm-hmm.
You are?
Yes, and I was thinking about Pink Panther.
Ah. Oh, yeah.
Now, is the Pink Panther a cartoon character, or is that...
Both.
...a character played by a famous comedic actor? What's his name?
Peter
Sellers, that's right.
It's both.
It's both.
But I'm referencing the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, caller number two, what inspiration have you drawn from the Pink Panther?
Well, I'm an artist, so I especially love Pink Panther because they integrate actual painting, and I just appreciate that.
Are you a painter?
I work with all different types of mediums.
I like collage making.
I wonder if either one of you have heard of this famous artist, and I'm forgetting his name, but there was a documentary about his life called In the Realms of the Unreal.
Mm-hmm.
And, What was famous and what was interesting about him is the fact that he had no formal education and no connection to the art world. He was born in the 19th century, in the late 19th century, grew up in an orphanage, and worked his entire life as a janitor for a Catholic hospital. And he was a hermit. He had no friends. But apparently he would go back into his apartment every night and draw oil paintings, collage, and write stories. And he didn't let anyone know about this until the day he died, when his landlord went into his home, into his apartment, and saw tens of thousands of pages of really amazing fiction and artwork.
I think anyone that has undertaken any creative endeavor has wished to be recognized in that way.
But he seemed to have no actual desire in his life. He lived in a world that was created by his own making. He lived in the world of the fiction and the painting.
He enjoyed it himself.
He created a world for himself.
But, but perhaps that is a lesson for those of us who do seek recognition, that it is precisely the when we are able to remove that bond, that desire, that we are able to achieve that.
And in the end, we must realize that the recognition that we so crave comes from within.
And so I really do highly recommend this documentary movie. Again, it's called In the Realms of the Unreal. And I found it to be a very... It actually, the movie itself combines a lot of artwork. It takes a lot of his paintings and illustrations and animates them in kind of slight, unobtrusive ways, and sort of integrates these animations with interviews about people who knew this man, this very reclusive, hermit-like character.
I'm going to put it on my Netflix list.
Excellent.
You know what was interesting about that was, for me, making art is definitely healing, and you could see that his art was especially influenced by his experience in the orphanage.
Right, it focused on children mostly, and some sort of controversial aspects. One strange example is that he depicted children as these kind of innocent heroes who needed to be protected from adults. And he depicted the innocence of children by often drawing them in the nude. And one of the interesting things was that both the male and the female children nude characters had penises in his drawings, had some sort of male genitalia. And some have speculated that he may just genuinely not have realized that women didn't have the same external genital organs as men had.
He was very insulated, I think. Yeah. Oh, wow. I'll see if Netflix has that. I'll let you know how I enjoy it.
That'd be wonderful.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you, Cora.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Indeed, thank you to all of our many callers, and apologies to the many callers that we could not get to with our limited time. Thanks also to Aurora.
Namaste.
And to Professor Levine.
Thank you for having me again.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here on WMBR Cambridge every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Acts Beyond Words. Ma'a salama.
for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Did you know that there are over 500,000 homeless cats in Massachusetts? You can help end this cat overpopulation problem by signing up today to have your cat spayed or neutered on the Catmobile. The Catmobile is a mobile clinic offering low-cost spay, neuter, vaccination, and microchipping services in the North Shore, Boston, Merrimack Valley, and Metro West areas. This is a nonprofit program of the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. For more information or to schedule an appointment on the Catmobile, call 1-888-495-SPAY or email spaymass@mrfrs.org.